Hi, I'm Tara M. Welcome to Sagas and Sass Season 4, brought to you by Geek Saga Entertainment. This is Episode 82, continuing our coverage of Lightbringer, the sixth installment in Pierce Brown's Red Rising Saga.
I'm fellow Sagas and Sass host Jonathan. This episode is titled The Battle for Phobos. We'll be discussing Virginia and Lysander's POVs through Chapter 31 in Rampart, Part 2 of Lightbringer.
And I'm regular guest host Seth, here to remind you that our Red Rising coverage is spoiler-free outside of the chapters we cover in each episode.
That said, don't forget that the opinions are those of us as individuals and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of the show as a whole. So let's be real, usually we're all on the same page or very close to it.
Last but not least, don't forget to check out our Patreon with 10 tiers ranging from $1 a month to $40 a month. It offers tons of ways to support us and receive some great perks in return. Find us at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment. And now it's time for us to talk about the battle for Phobos.
The time for battle fast approaches, and Virginia has landed on Phobos and made her way to the nucleus, the moon's military nerve center. It's become clear that the enemy intends to pierce the defensive shell and deploy an iron rain, which is surprising. She dons the crown that allows her to micromanage 200 battle stations, but the Republic is relegated to defensive posture as they wait to see where the Rim and Core forces plan to poke first. Disgusted at seeing the Morning Star renamed the Lightbringer and under Lysander's command, confused about why the combined Core Rim forces are attacking without Atalantia, and hating having to play defense, Virginia waits and waits and waits for the enemy to attack in earnest. Unfortunately, when the attack comes, it's not what anyone, even Virginia, could have expected, because as it happens, Lysander's forces fired rail slugs days in advance, and while they couldn't target specific ships, they still do a metric fuckton of damage. Republic intelligence is apparently for shit, which leads Virginia to the conclusion that the Lightbringer must be battle-ready despite their original assumptions. With Victra gathering her ships for her own fight, Virginia prepares to draw some blood of her own. On the other side of things, Lysander is with Ajax, preparing for the Iron Rain that Virginia already knew was part of their plan. And he might be on good terms with Ajax, but he is still freaking out. Even more so for this rain than the one on Mercury. Which makes sense, considering his surviving the rain depends on being able to knock out some of Phobos' shields ahead of time. Virginia, meanwhile, realizes what they're trying to do almost a moment too late. They're able to knock some of the empty destroyers that are being used as battering rams off course, but not enough, and soon she has to make some tough decisions, to sacrifice one sector shield to save the others, and to send Kevex into the fray. Because, oh yeah, they were too late recognizing another part of Lysander's plan. He is aping Darrow by using claw drills to get his men into Phobos. They breach the moon, but ha, Drakenjaegers are on their way, and so Lysander has to prepare to fight.
That's right. Virginia has been sending forces out to seal the breaches, and even begins believing that Lysander has overreached, though she's losing men left and right, including many from veteran units. Eventually, she recognizes that whoever is leading Lysander's forces, Ajax by the armor, is consistently flanking the units she sends out, and that she doesn't have any fresh forces left other than her own Lion Guard. Virginia attempts to send out Holiday, but Holiday refuses to leave her sovereign side again, and the Lion Guards go out with a gray named Virgilus at their head. Just then, a call comes in from the fleet notifying her that Diomedes is moving towards Phobos, but Virginia orders them to stand their ground, claiming that she needs to handle Phobos. Only soon, Virgilus and the Lion Guard have failed, the shield generator they were protecting is down, and to make matters worse, Kavax isn't responding to Virginia's hails. Oh wait, it can get worse. Because it's the Minotaur himself who is falling on Kavax's division. Not cool. Soon, it's past time for them to put the nucleus into escape pod mode, but before they can drop it, a green announces that Kavax's Drakenjaeger is on the line. Only it's Apollonius Alvalirath on the line, claiming that he's broken Virginia's champion. But we need to set the no, not Kavax feelings aside for a moment, because things turn out to be way more dire than Virginia could have expected when she initiated the nucleus escape. The lift can only descend so far, the shaft is blocked, and Virginia, Holiday, and the 28 Lion Guard members with them are forced to abandon escape plan A. Once they do, Virginia is automatically stacking contingencies on contingencies, and unfortunately, they end up needing basically every last one of them. Thankfully, Virginia is right when she predicts that Lysander's men are out for themselves and will compete to get at her, because it seems that both Cicero and Apollonius are trying to do so, but it also appears that they're not exactly working together. In fact, she's able to sneak away from Cicero and even almost capture Apple, but he's too good, their new tranquilizer weapons are duds, and Holiday is injured pretty badly before Virginia gives up the attempted capture and calls it a retreat. With Apple still on their tail and Cicero apparently back on it, Virginia has Holiday and her remaining Lion Guards hole up in a flight training room while she grabs some gear bags they've been dragging around and heads off on her own, cloaked, on one last Hail Mary mission. Turns out that Pack's name-dropping Valdir to his mother before she had to head up to Phobos was a bit of a hint of what was to come, because Virginia makes her way to the brig, where she releases Valdir and a bunch of other Obsidians to fight the Phobos version of a Rat War battle.
Needless to say, the plan works, although the Obsidians suffer massive casualties, with only Valdir and 10 others surviving. Holiday and Virginia's Lion Guards are rescued, and they all make their way to Phobos's hydroponic farms by way of sanitation tubes to the fertilizer plant, which is about as gross as you're probably picturing, but they make it through. Granted, Virginia isn't quite sure how, because at first they're definitely being chased, and then it seems suddenly that they aren't. But soon Screwface arrives to inform her that it was Victor to the rescue, and so Virginia is off to the command center with him, having to hope that Victor can handle the fight on Phobos while Niobe and Calloway struggle to keep the fleet intact. Because unfortunately for everyone who hates Lysander, which is still most people, right? He's quite a bit better off than Virginia at this point. Taking heavy casualties, sure, but with his Praetorians and Ajax by his side, Apple having nearly punched through the hollows, and Kyber around to take out random suicide bombers, he seems almost unstoppable. Well, except for Cicero's little screw-up, that is. He's supposed to be waiting in reserve, but thanks to Virginia, we already know he didn't follow orders and went after her instead. Oopsies. Actually, it's even bigger than a basic oopsies, because there's a counterattack coming up from the hollows, and his only choices are to turn tail and run or die at the hands of Victra and the remaining free legions who are on Mercury. Meanwhile, Lysander recalls his men and agrees with Ajax's offer to guard his back from Victra because, well, he doesn't really have any other choice right now. However, despite assurances of Ajax's aptitude for fights like this one, it turned out to be a trap. Lysander reviews a grainy recording showing his childhood friend being taken down by Victra and Thraxa, and disagrees with Roan when the Grey insists it isn't yet a loss. Sure, they gained a slice of the moon, but at what cost? Still, Roan isn't wrong. As the days pass, Lysander's forces creep forward and Virginia doesn't know how to stop them. But one night, she returns home from an inspection to find a commotion in the command center because Victra has arrived. Oh, and she's not empty-handed either. She presents Virginia with her gifts of none other than Cicero Auvotum on a leash and the rotting head of Ajax Algrimus.
Dang, though. That realization that while Lysander used some of the bones of the Republic's White Fleet to repair the Lightbringer, he used the rest to make the rail slugs that were fired ahead of time.
Yeah, being shot with your own detritus wouldn't make anyone feel good.
I gotta wonder, though. Granted, I don't think anybody has sensors strong enough to pick up a rail slug moving through space. But a whole bunch of them moving at the same time, no one's going to go, hey, what's this weird cloud of crap moving really quickly toward us?
I mean, they do pick them up.
Aren't they very small, though?
Yeah, but I don't know. It's one of those battles where I feel like, from what we've seen out of him, too much went right for him. He's not that good.
He has capable commanders with him, though. Your assumption that the lead general is the tactical genius is not always correct. Sometimes they're just the person who can put together a decent team. He was handed the Praetorians, who are clearly have skills, and he has the Minotaur.
I guess that's fair. It's
and,
just
and that... even Cicero, I think, is competent. He just is too out for himself.
Yeah.
You're not wrong. It does seem like everything comes up Lysander way more than it should. To be fair, he did also do a lot of things that Virginia didn't expect, including using the claw drills. Who would have thought? I certainly didn't expect that when I was reading this.
No, I guess he had people on the claw drills. Yeah, it's just that it's one of those things where, yes, I get that Cicero screwed up and that was a problem. And that really slowed down their advance. But also, I'm like, isn't this the point in the story where if this was Darrow, they'd throw an EMP at him and he'd be completely fucked?
Well, I think that there is armor and stuff now that can't be taken out with EMPs.
Oh, right? I know.
We learned that in Dark Age. So I feel like they've thrown the EMP thing to the wind for a bit because...
It's like, oh no, it's an EMP. No, we know.
Yeah, because it's always an EMP.
Always an EMP.
Maybe Pierce has been listening to our podcast in which we have joked literally almost in every episode that it's always an EMP.
Yeah, okay. I'm surprised the bomb they took with them to the dockyards was not an EMP, but was a straight new. I guess they couldn't get one. It was what they had. It was just a nuclear weapon they had lying around.
They only had Dominus Portobello. They didn't have any EMPs. Sorry. Anyway, I just wanted to say that the Cavix Sophocles goodbye, y'all, it actually had me tearing up. It felt very Arya and Nymeria in a way. Even though Cavix wasn't saying, no, go away, I don't want you, I was still like,
Sophocles knows Cavix is going to leave, and when he does, the fox begins to shake and then starts howling when Cavix has actually left the nucleus.
Virginia is also sad, thinking that a part of her heart goes with Cavix, and she stuffs Sophocles' jelly beans into the pocket that holds the splinter from the gallows. But still, Sophocles. I guess as a dog person, this just like really gets me in the gut.
I would like to remind everybody of this year's Ice and Fire Con, where I was holding the baby fox and Shelby had to tell me not to cry because I was almost going to, because he was so pure.
And your face in the picture is also...
Was he a clone?
No, I don't think so. I think it was an actual just little tiny baby fox who was okay with getting picked up by everybody. And it was amazing.
All right.
He missed the fox.
By
the time we got there, he was sleeping.
But you still got Winston. You still got the wolf cub who was
Wolf cub, yeah. The fox was sleeping in a bassinet.
I'll have to try to remember when I post this episode on our website to include some pictures of, because I have a picture with the fox. Maybe I'll include your picture with the fox too, Seth.
Sure, that's fine. Let everybody know I'm a big softie.
Anyway, back to the serious stuff. I say again, I do not like Ajax, but...
When Lysander tells him that they are going to show Atalantia, they aren't her pets. Ajax corrects him, claiming that this isn't about standing up to Atalantia, but rather because she killed Lysander's parents, thereby orphaning him, something unforgivable that family doesn't do to each other.
I don't know. Knowing that Ajax came to Lysander's side, much as we dislike both of them, makes him at least seem like a little more human.
Yeah, I mean, it knocks some of the asshole off him.
Yeah, a little bit. It makes him seem a little more human, and it also... The fact that he is stepping back some from the abuse that he suffered is also, even if we do not like him all that much and do not like Lysander, it's still nice to see a character stepping back from the person who abused them for a long time.
Yes, so. That's true.
Anyway, speaking of Lysander, I could not laugh when he pukes while he waits for his star shell to be launched in the rain. Now, I'm not necessarily laughing at the fact that he was actually feeling a bit of panic, but I'm sorry, not sorry, that I find it amusing that he was puking.
He also tries to find the mind's eye, of course, but it evades him and he thinks, let me see if I can remember the voice. I'm terrified. I don't want to die. I don't want to be here. I have to be here. Noble thoughts flee. No more peacemaker. No more politician. No more feeble seed. I am iron. I am death. I am gold.
Boy, I do not. I know you do a great voice, but I do not hear that voice as Lysander at all.
I'm trying to do a ridiculous voice of privilege is what it comes out to. And I couldn't copy what Nick's already done. So, you know.
Why would you assume you'd have a British accent, though?
Because I have a degree in Irish history and a chip on my shoulder.
Anyway, when he says, I am iron, I am death, I am gold. Sure you are, Lysander.
At that point, I kind of want to cue the Benny Hill music and have somebody come by and like just pat his head a bunch of times and then leave.
Taking a step back to talk about the accents. I know the grimaces are supposed to be from Africa. Where are the loons from?
The moon, literally.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know before that.
The Reds were
Irish. That's why I assume he's British.
The Ra's are from Asia somewhere, an Asiatic people. But I have no idea where the loons are supposed to be from. I couldn't figure it out.
They're a bunch of warring colonizers, so I feel like them being from Britain is just pretty on par. We don't know, though. We literally only know they're from the moon, so.
Warring colonizers and British? There are multiple groups of warring colonizers that were not British.
Of course, yes. Of course.
Mustang, they were actually, our Augustus, I just assume, was Roman. They were Italians.
Soundway. Yeah, I don't know. But I mean, like, that would be ridiculous because then every time I do Virginia, it'd be like, hey!
Well, Italian American is different than Italian.
No. Hey! New York. What's going on with these golds?
No. They're New York Italians.
Oh, New York Italian? That's completely different.
It's Tony Soprano. Virginia's father sounds like Tony Soprano.
I mean, I'm never going to get that out of my head now.
Yeah. And Virginia sounds like...
Meadow?
Meadow, exactly.
Oh my God. All right. Well, anyway, yeah, sure, Lysander, your iron, your death, your gold. Cool. Sure. Whatever you say. Lysander continues thinking he's too cool for school when he lands on a building and the green woman he can see through the window flashes him the crux and then takes a drink.
But thanks to the heat generated by Lysander's quadrille, her drink is boiling. She screams, and as her flesh catches fire, Lysander watches her with detached remove, thinking, who's the bug now?
This dude, y'all. I don't want to get too much into things that he does in the future, but, you know, he keeps trying to say he wants things to be better for the low colors and stuff. And it's like, then you act like this. And I know that it's war and she flipped you off. Ooh. And you literally watch her boil to death and then call her a bug in your mind. Dude, instead of thinking who's the bug now, you should literally be thinking, wow, that bitch has balls. Wrong thought to have here if you're not, I don't know, a space racist.
Well, I mean, it's typical gold, right? If everybody isn't kowtowing before them, it's an insult to their honor. So Lysander, of course, feels himself justified for thinking.
Honor.
Even worse is the fact that despite all of Virginia's efforts, damn it, he was doing really well for a while there too. Too well.
Yeah, to the point where when Virginia sees Apple and his forces fall to Kavix, she wonders, what would Darrow do? Fight and bleed until an opportunity to obliterate the enemy appears, and if none does, fight to the death. But then she, being Virginia, decides to retreat instead. Granted, she refuses to drop the nucleus as the escape pod it is until she's done all she can, leading to a cold sorting of life that demands so much of her focus that 20 minutes go by in a flash. And it's kind of been past time for them to evacuate at that point.
Only then Kavix calls in just before they initiate the drop sequence. Except it's not Kavix, it's freaking Apple. And please tell me I'm the only one who went into full-on, oh my fucking god, holy shit. Kavix is dead panic when Apple announces that he's broken Virginia's champion.
Okay, yeah, really, no. I was like, no. I refuse to believe that this is happening.
Kavix and Thraxa had better survive to the end of this series. That's all I'm saying.
Don't we want it to flip the script and have Lysander win after all?
No,
that is a no.
If that happens, I'm gonna write such an angry letter.
I feel like not all of the remaining Telemonuses are going to survive this. Niobe, Kavix's wife, is still alive. And there's that other daughter whose name I can never remember because she only appeared once very briefly in Iron Gold to tell Lyria, no, you can't. And Lyria do anyway. But yeah, I have no idea where she is or whether she's still alive because we haven't heard anything about her since then, as far as I can remember. But I do not believe that all four of the remaining Telemani, assuming that the other daughter is still alive, are going to survive to the end of the series. And don't get me wrong, I will be upset as hell if Niobe or Thraxa dies, but I'll be more upset if Kavix dies. The only Telemannis who I would be more upset about dying than Kavix, and maybe not even more upset. No, I would be more upset if Sophocles dies, actually. I'm not even afraid to say that. Sorry, yeah. Sorry. I'll be more upset.
Can't they just bring Sophocles back with another clone, though?
Well, but only if there are Telemani left to do it. Yeah, Sophocles is the best boy. I also hope they don't do a thing where it's like all of Kavix's children get killed. It's like, come on, no. I'm rooting for Thraxa and Sophocles to make it through. That's my hope.
Yeah. And who are you marrying Thraxa off to, then?
No one?
Thraxa decides who she gets married yeah. to, if at all.
I feel like Thraxa just belongs, and I say on her own, but I mean that in the most empowering way. She's yeah. fine on her own. She has her friends. She has her family for now. But I don't think Thraxa needs to be married off to anybody. She badass. Yeah. Badass with her bad lass. Although Darrow has that right now, so.
Yeah, it's true.
Virginia and her guards might have to abandon the escape lift, and she might have to come up with all sorts of contingency plans, but when Holiday tries to tell the Lion Guards that the Sovereign's safety is their only priority, Virginia snaps.
Nil that. We are outnumbered. They will close in from all sides, but they are glory hounds out for themselves. They will compete against one another to get me. We are not them. We are a pride. We kill together. We work together. We survive together. They came for a hunt, but they forgot. Hic sunt leones. Man, I love a good, concise sovereign speech.
She knows what she's doing.
She's so good. Oh, damn. That fight with Apple, though.
Like, okay, apparently this wasn't the time for him to be captured for a lot of reasons, but they almost had him. If it weren't for the Misericord tranquilizer things not working like they were supposed to, well, Apple being so damn Apple. That was another thing where I'm like, oh, I see. And it failed because those didn't work. They just didn't work, huh? Okay.
None of them, because there's like two sides to them as well. So I know Virginia's like, we get a lot of duds with this, but also that's a lot of duds, man.
Yeah, it's a lot of duds. A lot of duds.
But Apple is also literally like peak gold right now.
He's having his moment of erite, which I'm sure he would appreciate.
Yeah, but he's already flipped sides three times in the series. I suspect we see a fourth and a fifth.
Maybe. I could see Apple trying to force some final confrontation with Darrow. That might happen. I mean, and Lysander is also going to try to do the same thing. And I imagine that most of the golds on the society side would like to force a final confrontation with Darrow.
I agree. I think Apple's going to try to force a confrontation. But the weird thing is, like, I know Apple is bad, but he's like the one person, or, yeah. well, maybe not the one person from the other side that I'd like to see survive, but I kind of would like to see him survive.
You know what? It would be nice if we did a little circle and he ended up back where he started.
Yeah, but maybe not with like his own entire suite of rooms and just literally everything he wants all the time.
Yeah.
So good one, Pierce, having Pax mentioned Valdir seemingly in passing and then bring him back for real to essentially rescue Virginia.
Virginia does not like Valdir. I'm going to try to get through this without laughing. Noting that he was already a teenage butcher by the time he watched Darrow give Ragnar the razor in the mud of Aegea. That moment left an impression on young Valdir. He fell in love with my husband. And I mean the sort of love Patroclus had for the son of Peleus. Not exactly versed in Ovid, Valdir expressed his love in the language he knew best. Making Darrow's enemies into stains. He grew bitter, as those whose love is unrequited do, when Darrow paired him with Sephi as a power alliance to unite the Obsidians. At least, that's my theory. I don't think this is the first time we've heard the Valdir was in love with Darrow thing either. I believe it was just kind of touched on, and I can't quite remember. It might have been Virginia in Dark Age. It was just kind of an in passing. Yeah, Valdir was really obsessed with Darrow, or maybe it was even Ephraim noticing that sort of, this guy really loves Darrow. All of this said, Valdir does save the day, because fetching him is the only reason Virginia and her people get out of their current sticky, slippery, stinky situation.
By the way, for those of you who have missed the innuendo, the son of Peleus was Achilles, and Patroclus and Achilles were a thing.
Back with Lysander, apparently Ajax was working his way up to being everyone's fave. But I gotta be honest, for my part, the real badass is Kyber.
Really, though, how she has a gut feeling about the Medicus who is flitting around and takes him out and he turns out to be a suicide bomber? Like, where did he even come from? Is he from the Republic side of things, or was he put there by Atalantia? I gotta say, probably Atalantia. I don't recall the Republic having used suicide bombers before, and that's usually the kind of thing you do if you're on the outs trying to get into power.
You're probably right. There's still this small part of me that's like, the guy might not have necessarily been ordered by someone from the Republic to do this. Yeah. Although I also would not put it past some people from the Republic. including like Victra, as much as I love her, to put out like a, hey, anybody want this job? She's putting it on the dark web, like posting on the dark web. In the end, it probably doesn't really matter and we'll likely never know, but still, go Kyber, I guess. I say I guess because we all want Lysander taken out, but it obviously isn't going to happen this way or this soon. As much as it sucks that Kyber is working for Lysander, I do like Kyber. She seems really cool, man.
Yeah.
Cicero, on the other hand, is in the doghouse, and for good reason. As previously mentioned, he's been chasing after Virginia, but he was supposed to be waiting in reserve.
This is one of those things I'm not sure how I feel about it. On the one hand, he seemed to be not so bad as core golds go anyway in Lysander's earlier chapters. But now Cicero's kind of screwed everything up and showed his true colors with his whole, I'll not have a Martian taking the glory when this day was made possible by Mercury thing. On the other hand, him acting the fool caused problems for Lysander. So yay. I don't know. None of it was surprising. So
no, I'm just like, anytime anything goes wrong for Lysander, I just feel better. Like, I just generally feel better. That is how much I just... I have disliked very few genre antagonists as much as I dislike Lysander. Honestly, I don't feel this way about Sauron. I don't. I just don't. He's sitting up there in his tower, waiting for things to happen, and things do, and they're bad for him. Yay, team. But Lysander could get a splinter, and I'd be like, that's right, you got a splinter, you son of a bitch.
The thing is, like, Sauron is pure evil.
Yeah.
I mean, and even if we look to some of the antagonists in Song of Ice and Fire, there's the kind of pure evil ones like Ramsay Bolton, and then there's the conniving ones like Littlefinger, but they're all terrible and they know they're terrible. They don't even care that they're terrible. But in Lysander's case, it's the hypocrisy of it that is the most frustrating thing.
Well, but he doesn't see himself as terrible.
Exactly. No, it's the hypocrisy of it.
But
it's not hypocrisy if you don't see it.
Oh, yeah. No, it is, because he says things earlier on in the series that would paint actions he's taken as terrible. He sets up an ethos and then he continually violates it. So, wow. Ajax had a shining moment getting propped up and praised by everyone for how awesome he was doing. And then he goes off to chase Victor and bam, dead.
Granted, it did take both Victor and Thraxa to take him down, though, again, really amused by the fact that at first Lysander thought that Thraxa, who was fully armored, was a man. But Diomedes is like, and points out that it has to be Thraxa Autolomonas because of the fighting style. And I also really like learning that Thraxa has her own fighting style called Windsweeper. We don't learn much about it other than like, okay, we learned that Diomedes has been studying all these things, which not shocking, because Diomedes is pretty cool. We know Darrow has the Willow Way, and I guess Cassius has got his cravat and his sort of, I guess what you would call like traditional razor fighting that he was trained in. But it's cool that Draxa apparently has her own fighting style. Either way, I mean, listen, it did take both Victor and Thraxa to get rid of Ajax.
Yeah, it did. I have this feeling that we know Diomedes is doing it, but you know those old, you watch a show about football or a movie about football, and one of the things they do is they watch movies of themselves. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling that there is a pastime, there's a chunk of Iron Gold society that just spends its time watching videos of people they want to fight.
No, I think it's unique to Diomedes. I think he's
really?
So I'm going to disagree with both of you slightly.
I think he's just like a total student of fighting.
Yes, I think with Diomedes, I don't think it's that he wants to fight Thraxa or has ever really thought, I want to fight, because Thraxa wasn't, as far as we know, wasn't at the Battle of Ilium. No. So there's no reason he would want to fight her specifically. He is a student, like John said, of fighting. It's Apple that is absolutely like what you're saying, though, Seth. Apple is absolutely the person who is studying the tactics and techniques of the people he wants to fight. And as we discussed in the very first episode of our Lightbringer cover, the Darrow episode, he apparently did not study Sevro enough.
Well, Xander is, of course, upset. But Roan just tells him, we can hold Sectors 1 and 8 while they eliminate or at least contain Victor and Pegasus Legion. Sure, it will be a grind, but Roan can handle it. And when their allies land, they'll have the numbers. So it's not a loss yet.
But Lysander questions him. Not a loss? This was supposed to be our staging ground for Iron Rain next month. The ships, the money, the lives! That moment at Rome, Ajax! Ajax choosing me, dying for me, Clerastes. All for that for a slice of moon and a grind? If that's not a loss, what do you call it?
Well, Rome calls it war, and honestly, duh, Lysander. So used to getting your way, you brat. Did you not expect that anyone important to you would die in this battle for this moon that you know the Republic is going to do everything in their power to stop you from taking? My God.
I just think it's interesting the order of things. The ships, the money, the lives. It's last.
He pulled out a lot of stops. The slugs, the claudrils, all of that stuff.
I mean, he literally sent ships to die. And they were empty, but the ships themselves, he destroyed a bunch of ships trying to destroy the shields.
And it really hasn't gotten them anywhere. So, yay.
Apparently they do keep on keeping on, though, and Virginia's at a loss for a bit, powerless to stop them completely.
I wonder if she ever had a chance or reason to visit what are essentially field hospitals in the past, or if she's taking a page from Darrow's book by doing so in this last chapter that's part of this battle section that we're covering in this episode, because the way she talks and thinks about it, it doesn't seem like she's ever done this before. I feel like it has to be from Darrow that she got this, because I can't imagine her father ever having done this or thought to visit, again, what are essentially field hospitals. Virginia notes that even the dying haven't lost faith. They don't ask where Darrow is, but rather tell her that he'll return to save his friends and bring doom to the enemies of freedom. She's jealous of their faith and even pities them a bit for it, but she's also thankful for and admiring of their conviction, noting, when they die holding my hand, when they whisper Darrow's name, when they say they will find peace in the veil, I break a little more. And each time I find in the breaking, I grow stronger, more desperate to protect this beautiful idea my husband has awoken and that I have helped prosper. They do not crave freedom for themselves. They crave freedom for others, for those yet unborn. In that I find a dignity greater than any gold virtue. Theirs is a religion of hope, not doom.
Hey, Virginia had a right to a little hope herself, considering Victor and Thraxa soon return with a captive Cicero and Ajax's head as a trophy.
That's a great moment. You know, things are not great for really either Lysander or Virginia at this point.
No, it's a slog. At this point, it's a little bit of a World War I situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but it's nice. It's also nice to see our side get a little bit of a win, because for them, it's mostly been a very bloody retreat.
Yes, it has been, but also as much as they're having to retreat, it's like a tiny bit, a tiny bit, a tiny bit. And as we already noted in the previous passage, Lysander has spent so much to get so little. That, again, yeah, you're likening it to World War I is, it's both like depressing and also very apt.
Yeah. Turning the moon thus far into a somewhat Pyrrhic victory for Lysander has been nice.
Yeah. And Victra marching in with Cicero on a leash and just like Ajax's head. I feel weird that I feel bad that Ajax died. Or maybe not bad isn't the right word, but like, I have a feeling I can't really describe about the fact that Ajax is dead. Beyond that, if this was many other people with Virginia like marching and holding their decapitated head, I'd be like, fuck yeah, Victra. But I don't know. I feel weird about it.
Yeah. He was just getting to the point where he wasn't quite terrible. And then no sooner did he have a moment than he got his head cut off.
And kind of off screen, too, off page, right? Like we
didn't see it, but we saw someone see it, which is, I've had this conversation, I think, on one of my podcasts, but somebody got killed off screen in a series that I'm reading, and it made me so angry. And Ajax, he got killed at a remove, but not quite off screen.
Yeah. I mean, he was dead when Lysander got the recording, so there was that. But yeah, I mean,
At least we got to see the fight.
Some of it anyway. I would have loved to have known more about that fight, honestly. Lysander was like, I don't know if he actually, I can't remember actually if he said this, but all I can picture him being like, turn it off, I can't watch.
Maybe it got cut for space. I don't know.
The editor took out that scene.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, no, just we can't. It's
we don't
too
need
much.
To find him that. Too much like, blood. Don't need more.
It's a 20-page fight between him and Victor and Thrax and
Pierce. Well, none of them are POV characters either. That's so true. Yeah. Yeah. It would have been weird to have Lysander being like, I'm watching the whole thing and this happens and then this happens. And you know, it was written well the way it was written. I don't know. I know Ajax would have been an asshole, would have continued to be an asshole in terms of being a Korgold and not even being like necessarily one of the more palatable Korgolds, yeah. Like Horatia or really even Sister. Like Sister was a brat for what he did during this battle. But as Korgolds go, he's really kind of one of the better ones. God, I hate that. Low I'm hate. I, yeah. Bar. Yeah, exactly. Low bar.
It's this is maybe not quite fair, but it's...
You don't know that many Korgolds.
Yeah.
We know
it's
enough.
A little bit like saying, well, Rommel was okay.
Was he?
I mean, we know he was in on a plot to kill Hitler, and I frankly gotta give out points for that.
Oh my god. Could you imagine? Now I'm kind of like, ooh, what if we did a point system for Korgolds? And like
everybody starts in the negative. Lysander's negative a million.
No, Lysander is not the worst.
No, I think we could start Lysander actually in the positive if we started with Iron Gold Lysander.
Oh, yeah. If we start with Iron Gold Lysander, he starts in the positive and then just drops.
Honestly, now I need this to be a thing. I need a spreadsheet. I don't have time for this, but the chances of me actually trying to create a spreadsheet.
Hey, listeners.
I don't know, though. The chances of me trying to create a spreadsheet of core golds and how awful they are might not be the worst.
And now in memoriam of...
The Green Woman, who essentially flipped Lysander off before burning to death. Or boiling to death, I guess. A sucky way to go, but what a final act to be remembered for.
Oro the Blue, who went above and beyond and who Virginia tried to save despite him questioning some of her decisions. At least his skin was gently laid to rest.
A whole bunch of obsidians who had good deaths as they helped save Virginia, Hade, and the Lion Guards.
And Ajax, who, just as he was finally starting to not be the total worst, went out like a champ. But also, good job, Victra and Thraxa. Sorry, not sorry. As we close out the episode, just want to give a shout out to our Heroes Tier patron, Tommy of the TKOK Podcast Network. Thank you so much for supporting us. Once again, I'm Tara, along with fellow host Jonathan and practically permanent guest host Seth. Don't forget that you can always hit us up at Sagas and Sass on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, or email us at sagasandsass@gmail.com with any comments or thoughts you might have. Our next episode, titled Aftermath, will cover Virginia, Darrow, and Lysander's POVs from Chapter 32 through Chapter 36 in Part 2 of Lightbringer. Please consider supporting us at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment for early access to our recordings.
End recordings.
Thank you for listening to the Sagas and Sass podcast. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter at Sagas and Sass.